Good afternoon. Thank you to the physical activity section for organizing this session. I really appreciate that and inviting me. And I highly recommend to anybody, if you're not involved in committees that organize these meetings, get involved. It gives you a lot more insight into how this meeting is run, and you get a lot out of it. So I would highly recommend that. So I'd like to give a shout out to my co-authors, Dr. Tony Pritchard, Irina Melnick, who is actually here today, and Dr. Zhen Zhang. And we have no relationships to disclose. And I also like to give a shout out to our friends over at the disability section. They actually did the formatting of this particular PowerPoint, not the presentation itself, but the template. So I tried to stick to that format as well as possible. The learning objectives I'd like to look at today are discuss risk factors associated with school absenteeism, compare methods for categorizing levels of physical activity and absenteeism. I feel like after these first two presentations, they're so robust, they've pretty much answered all the questions that I'm going to give you, but we'll see. Compare methods, and then finally differentiate physical activity, fitness, and volume and intensity. So when we think about school absenteeism, reports have suggested that it's detrimental to our child development. I don't think this is disputable. It also mentions that the actual not being in class, the actual act of being absent, is more of a threat than the reason for being absent. And currently in the United States, our chronic absenteeism rate is about 10 to 15%. So when we look at physical fitness, as we've seen from our prior presentations, it's positively associated with higher academic test scores. Not a lot to show that it's inversely associated with poor attendance and actual poor discipline. Physical activity, on the other hand, is also positively associated with academic achievement. And we only found one that was showing that it was associated with school absenteeism. Now, why would we separate physical activity and physical fitness? You've heard a lot of great evidence here about that. But when we think about physical activity, you have to do that to get the product of fitness and the benefits of physical activity on a dose-response relationship. So you could have low levels of intensity of physical activity, but still gain the cognitive benefits of it, blood profile benefits, without achieving aerobic fitness. So this dose relationship response is also important to look at, which has also been suggested by our two prior speakers. So the purpose here was, and when you think about Melissa's study here, who talked about the dose response and the threshold, we were thinking about embarking on an amazing study like this with lots of schools, lots of people, but we thought, wait a second, let's think about what would we need to consider before we did that. So what we wanted to do was assess the independent relationship of physical activity and severe school absenteeism. And the thing about absenteeism, you got to remember, we're looking at small sample sizes here. So we need a big population. So what we did is we used NHANES, which is a national representative sample. If you're not familiar with NHANES, it's a really great sampling methodology put on by the CDC, and they always oversample underrepresentative populations. So you can pretty much be sure to get a good distribution of your population to the nation. Now, we used the 05 and 06 and 07 and 08 cycles because, unfortunately, after that, they didn't actually track absenteeism at school anymore after that. So this is the most recent you can use. We had children 6 to 11, and it was usually the mothers who acted as a proxy to respond for them. And after our exclusion criteria and integrity check of the data, we had a sample of about 1,048 children. And for adolescents, it was 1,117. We split up school absenteeism into three categories. So here you have a little bit about that dose we're looking at. We had normal attendance, and then we had moderate absenteeism, which was 5% of classes missed. And the general consensus is that 10% of classes missed, from the research we looked at, was considered to be severe school absenteeism. Not a lot, that's only 18 days throughout the year, but when you think about that, if you have children, that's a lot of classes. So it is pretty severe. Looking at the physical activity and the children's mothers, typically the proxy who responded, the question that they were asked on the CDC, the NHANES survey, was how many times per week the child played or exercised enough to make them sweat and breathe hard, similar to the WHO definition of physical activity. And I underline times because this is really important, because this sort of stresses that dose that we're looking at here. And if we could, if we have a higher sample, I would actually recommend increasing the doses as to splitting up into even more categories. So we had high, which was more than 7 times per week. That seems like a misdemeanor. Got to be careful. This is not 7 days per week. It's 7 times. So it could be they had 2 days a week. 2 day, 3 day, anything like that. Medium was 4 to 6 times per week. And then inactive was anything below the 4 to 6 character. The adolescents, they actually, what they do is they respond to the global physical activity questionnaire. And this is a great questionnaire. It looks at their physical activity over the course of a month, and it has 37 different activities on it, including leisure and sedentary time. Now, when we categorize this, we had to look at their intensities, we had to look at the volume, and this is really difficult to do, and particularly to get enough samples into each category. When I go into the actual data analysis, you have to understand that as you break this down into more and more categories, you lose people in each of those categories. So we had to do a little tweaking, but we didn't manipulate out of our bounds or ethically. So we had high physical activity, which was 4 days of vigorous physical activity and a total of 3,000 met minutes per week. Or they satisfied this criteria of 7 or more days of combined walking, a moderate and or vigorous, and a minimum of 4,000 minutes per week. They were categorized into the medium physical activity level if they did one vigorous day plus 10 minutes per day weekly, or one moderate day plus 20 minutes per day weekly, or minimum 500 minutes per week. And the inactive, they did not meet these criteria. So we tried to do a little bit more with the dose as opposed to just meet or not meet guidelines. So our covariates that we control for, we try to do as much as we can but without losing our power in our analysis. Family income, education, marital status, age of head of household, and then specific to the children, race, ethnicity, BMI, and screen time. And you're probably wondering that. This is a part of a larger study, but there is research to show that overweight and obesity has been correlated with absenteeism, as has screen time. So our methods of analysis, when you're dealing with NHANES, you have to use a fairly complicated analysis. We use SAS, and we have to weight the actual data and use the proper nesting variables. We use a logistic regression model in order to try to find the predictors. As mentioned earlier, we use those three categorical variables of absenteeism to see that was the dependent variable. And then we had adjusted odds ratio, and we also did sensitivity specificity testing just to make sure, because some of these sample sizes are pretty small, so we want to make sure, well, if we move one over, do we still get what we get? And we did. So when we look at this, we had, for children, the mean missed school days was 3.8. For adolescents, was 3.7. And the thing to take about this is a nationally representative sample, so this kind of reflects the United States here. The severe absenteeism was only about 2% for children and 3% for adolescents, which is good. That'd be low. But again, makes challenges for when we're looking for analysis and what we want to do. About 19% of children and 18% of adolescents were physically inactive. And then highly active, 52% of children and 42% of adolescents were highly active. Now, here's something to consider is that we had different categories for children and adolescents. So we actually looked at these in separate models. So after that, we had to, just because of the way the categorization occurred. And there was definitely a significant difference between the two. So that's one other reason why we did it separately. So the physical activities and absenteeism. So children who were inactive category, so that was basically below 4 times per week of physical activity, had a 4.09 missed school days. Those who were in the high physical activity level, yeah, I know it's surprising. We have some explanations, possible explanations. Missed 4.26 missed school days. And our reference category, the medium physical activity, was 2.71. So that's where we want it. So you have this sort of a U-curve going on with that. Now, for adolescents, we didn't see this type of observation. Things were pretty much normal. And with our medium physical activity reference group, with 3.77 missed school days per year. So when you do your final model and you look at this, what are the odds of people in the inactive category for children now. This was not observed for adolescents. So for levels of physical activity levels versus severe school absenteeism, those who were inactive, the children, had a 12 times greater odds of being severely absent. For high physical activity levels, they had almost 15 times greater odds of being severely absent. So why is this happening? Just to sum that up, children who were inactive, engaged in high level of physical activity, were at increased odds of severe school absenteeism, but this was not observed among adolescents. Now, when we think about this, the inactivity makes a lot of sense. Keeping in mind this is independent of weight status, screen time, and all the other covariates that we set. And if this is true, this is frustrating because the current focus, and there's mandates according to No Child Left Behind, and you'll find this in the documents, to have a focus on academic performance, and schools have to report this. At the same time, there's a lot of reports of this reduced physical education time, and we've seen the challenges that we've been facing from the two studies that we've performed here. So it's like putting the cart before the horse. It's like, as was said earlier, you know, why is this happening? Why are we cutting down physical activity and to try just to increase school performance? But the challenge with this particular questionnaire that was done by NHANES is that what is the absence? And this is, we didn't know. It's either illness or injury is the question. So that provides some challenges for looking at the actual association of this. So here's that high physical activity one. Now keep in mind that physical activity is good, fitness is good, and so while this looks contrary, there's explanations for it. The increased physical activity can increase injury. So you might have instances where you have a child who got injured and was out of school for 10 days because of a broken arm, broken leg, whatever. Those are just suggestions. Now, the other thing is, when we look at volume and overscheduled children, we see this a lot in our society. Children who are pressured are vulnerable to illness because of anxiety and stress. So the strength of this is that we had a nationally representative sample. We used a complete school age range so we can look at all age levels. We had the three levels of absenteeism along with actually the three levels of physical activity and a broad scope physical activity inventory. Limitations include those self-reports and the absenteeism data with NHANES anyway is not verifiable, was not verified with report cards. That's a little different when you do regional studies because you can actually go into certain systems and you can get better data, but then you're looking at regionally and specific, so you can't generalize that to the rest of the population. So you have to decide what you want to do. Do you want to do national? Do you want to do regional or state or local? The question wording for absenteeism, as we said, it was illness or injury, so that has some problems there. And a different assessment for physical activity, so we couldn't put these together for adolescents and children. We had to look at separate models. Also, a cross-sectional nature, you cannot infer any causation here. This is strictly an association. So this study really created more questions than it answered for us, but it really allowed us and actually has been reinforced by Melissa and our presentations before, is that really looking at the dose is very important. Because if we look back at that high physical activity levels, it was 7 and above. But which time is it that they actually are falling into this threshold of severe absenteeism? Is it when they get to be physically active or the activity going on twice a day, three times a day? And what type of activity is that? Is it swimming in the morning? Is it soccer in the afternoon? Is it dance class? Is it piano? So it could be a variety of things, and that brings in a whole greater question for our administrators. The importance of doing on the low end, instead of just doing meeting the guidelines, if you look at least for adolescents, we can get a lot of health benefits out of moderate to vigorous physical activity 3 days a week, even though the guidelines say you should do it most days of the week or 150 minutes total per week. However, if you're doing 4 or 5 times a week, but that's not really quite the guidelines, you may be doing well. But it's that threshold below 0 to 1, 0 to 3 that may be the problem. And then you look at the combined and independent associations. This is important so administrators can really focus in what is the problem here. Is it the actual physical activity or is it something else? is it the behavior of the child? So we had no psychometric variables here that we can look at. If we had that kind of information, then we can really understand is, all right, so they're inactive. Maybe it's just because there's some sort of the attitude of the child, behavioral issues of the child, things like that. Why are they absent? That would be very important. And if you can actually do this in your study and say, okay, this person was physically, inactive, and here are the reasons why. Now, when it comes down to the sickness and the, at least sickness, there have been reports, so particularly for adults, is that if you're doing a lot of high-intensity activity, which is true for kids as well who are overtaxed, you can fall to illness a lot. Those who are low physical activity or fitness levels, or low-intensity levels, they also can be more susceptible to sickness because of lower immune function. It's those people in that moderate range who do really well for intensity and physical activity levels. So why is really important to figure out a lot of those things. And then, as was mentioned before, assess the full school year of physical activity cycles. Now, I asked a question about accelerometry because this was our question as well. They actually had accelerometry data available here. But you have to decide is, do you want to take a cross-section of a week? And is it raining that week? I think you brought that up. Is it raining? Are you going to get your true physical activity levels? Accelerometers can't be used in the swimming pool. So if you have children who are doing a lot of, which is actually the second most popular physical activity in the U.S., can you actually measure that? So maybe a combined of accelerometry and self-reports would be good, and it definitely should be over the full cycle, particularly for adolescents, because they might be in football, and after that, that's it. They just go off and they eat and they do nothing else. So it's really important to do that and get an idea of what's going on. So having said that, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Well, the great thing about that's potentially possible, yeah. With the NHANES and the question from the mothers, it's basically physical activity over a period of 7 days. So that's a limitation as well. And that's all physical activity, and it included outside and inside school. For adolescents, it's the same thing. The global physical activity questionnaire was addressed to both in school and out of school. So it's across the whole broad spectrum.
Okay. So my follow-up question to that is, if you were in the shoes of a curriculum director, principal, or school administrator, what would you conclude from this study in the context of other studies? I mean, were the methods stronger but the result weaker, or were the methods comparable, or was it, what do you really conclude from a policy perspective?
Right, I would probably not make a whole lot of conclusions to policy here. I would make a lot of recommendations for future research, and they've also come out here, is that you really need to do a comprehensive, if you're going to measure physical activity, that's the messy one. Fitness is easy. You can determine their fitness level, and you can probably determine a threshold quite easily based on their scores. But physical activity, you really have to do comprehensive, and you got to get it all throughout the year, and what type of physical activity. If you're going to do this kind of study, yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.